In this podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about the sun. I think most people know about the sun. They felt the warmth of its rays and know some basic facts that it looks white or yellowish. It's circular, it's in the sky, and it rises in the east and sets in the west. And we tell our time there's high noon, but so although we have time zones, on average in that time zone, it will be roughly in the peak of the sky around midday. We've done a few tweaks on that. So I want to actually give you a basic understanding framework to move forward to know a little bit more in depth and a bit more of a scientific explanation of the sun. Indeed, this is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. We're going to have to, firstly, to see the sun, we're going to have to journey into space. Now, I want you to imagine the sun and the Earth is orbiting in an ellipse. So, actually, it's roughly a circle, but it's a slightly squashed circle. So, there's some times of the year that we're actually closer to the sun. In fact, closest to the sun a little bit. The sun is a little bit closer and hotter. In the Australian summer. So the actual size of the sun changes in size, its actual size, as we travel through space closer to it and further away. And as we travel closer to it, we're actually traveling faster. So the actual regions of space which we travel through is more quick or faster in the Australian summer when we're closer to the sun. Now, of course, the day, the way that we define a day, is determined by the spinning of the Earth. So that's like a pendulum. That's a fairly fixed unit of the day. But the amount of space which we sweep through varies throughout the year. Now, we've got that ellipse that I've asked you to imagine. And you can look up a few numbers to work out the overall distance there. I'll give you a few rule of thumb answers a bit later on. But firstly, I'm going to get into your idea, the actual direction that we're rotating, or actually orbiting in space, and the direction, the sense that we're rotating on Earth. To do this, I want us to actually travel into space, not off the North Pole, because the North Pole is at an angle, spinning at an angle 23 degrees off from the axis of the orbital plane. But in that orbital plane, we just go vertically up into the page from the North Pole. And so we're looking down, we can see the sun, and we can see the Earth, and we can see the rest of the galaxy, or the centre of the galaxy. So Australia, the Southern Cross, you look down, and looking south, you're looking pretty much into the centre of the galaxy. Now, the centre of the galaxy is not bright, a big bright cluster of stars, namely because there's a lot of galactic exhaust and gas in the way. In fact, the centre of the galaxy is near the Southern Cross, and it's something called the coal sack, a dark region of space. But behind that, that's very bright in the infrared, and we can definitely see the centre of the galaxy there. Now, just before we go too much further, the Earth and Sun is, if you'd like, a gyroscope. It's spinning, it's stable. And so the actual our orientation in the universe stays the same as we orbit around the galaxy. So we're, we're 30 more. The galaxy is 100,000 light years across. We're two-thirds of the way out from there. Roughly, I think it's 30,000 light years out, and it takes us 100 million years to actually orbit around the galaxy. And we'll go into that. There's a lot of interesting things that happen. But I just want to fix on this gyroscope idea. So what will happen is that our gyroscopic orientation will stay the same. So in 50 million years' time, the center of the galaxy, as we think of it, will actually be in the northern hemisphere. So our orientation is stuck in that plane. So I should point out that if you're trying to think of the disk of the galaxy, we're spinning like a little wheel. Our axis is pointing along, our axis of orbit is pointing into the center of the galaxy. So that axis will stay the same. As we move along over 50 million years, that axis will still be in the same orientation, but the galaxy will move into the centre. So this is rather interesting that from our point of view, we stay stationary, but the galaxy looks to be spinning around us. It's a very slow time every 100 million years, but a lot of things happen in 100 million years. Well, not as far as Earth is concerned. So life on Earth, you know, from multicellular is 50 million years old. Let's just try and, 50 million years old is where life starts to get a little bit interesting on Earth. So we've been sort of around the galaxy, we've orbited the galaxy five times since life has begun. So what I want you to do is that we've got this galactic, our orbital plane, and we're looking down through the North Pole of the Earth and into the galaxy centre, and it only happens to be there because we just happen to be at that point in history where it's going through. And our first point, question we're going to ask is what the sun sets in the west, and does the Earth spin clockwise, and or anti-clockwise? So you just really got to imagine if it's spinning anti-clockwise, think of a position in the west, that position in the west will eventually spin away from the sun. And so the answer is that we are spinning anti-clockwise in space. If we have that clock face as we're looking from the north down southwards, so we see the southern skies and the center of the galaxy. So it's spinning anti-clockwise that way. Then we're orbiting the sun roughly 365 days. Let's call it 60 days. And rather than calling it an ellipse that we're going in, which is a squashed egg shaped, and a bit like a comet, but you know, much more a comet's an extreme ellipse. This is a more gentle ellipse. But say it takes rather than 365 days, our orbital our rotation is roughly one day. I can easily go into the science of that. So we progress 1 degree per day, and again, I want to get you to go through the mental gymnastics of it, but we're actually also orbiting in the negative, anti-clockwise direction. So we're orbiting in the anti-clockwise direction. So so let's just work this through. In one orbit of one complete rotation through 360 degrees in space, we orbit anti-clockwise, and so what happens is that we are both spinning and moving through space. Now what happens is that during that day we move 1 degree further around the circle, from 90 degrees if you like, up to zero and back to 270 to 180 and back again over a whole year. So I'm just trying to get you to imagine this as a typical angle, rather than using the clock face. I've converted the clock face from 0 to 90 degrees, going clockwise around to 360 degrees. So we're at 90, we go to 89 degrees in a single day, just roughly speaking. And we have rotated 360 degrees. Now we have to actually rotate another degree to get back pointing towards the sun. So this is our first, I suppose, piece of information to get your mind around, that the actual the Earth spins 360 degrees in space in 23 hours and 56 minutes, I think it's 56 minutes. And then we've got to actually spin an extra degree a day to actually point back at the same point at the sun, because we've decided that rather than using the exact rotation of the Earth, we're going to do the rotation of the Earth as pointing to the sun. So that's a little bit hard to get your mind around. So if you actually do the maths, which Sir Francis Drake did, a swashbuckling Renaissance English navigator who sailed around the world, the Earth, once in Queen Elizabeth's time, he travelled around the Earth, didn't have sufficient supplies, so stole money from Spanish galleons and all that type of stuff. He came back to England, and his ship's logs had actually an extra day, so he actually spun around the Earth another time. So this is something to get your mind around. So the Earth, so those are sort of the time, date, orientation of the Earth and how things are spinning. So it's anti-clockwise and anti-clockwise as seen from the north above, looking south to the galactic center. And that's only just a point in history, and it will change every 100,000 years. There's lots, 100 million years for us to go around. So we're actually traveling compared to the speed of light, a nice sedate, but mind-blowingly fast speed around the galaxy. So I suppose what we want to do is get to the Earth itself, just to put it into your mind. It's the Earth is made up of mostly iron, silicon, magnesium, oxygen. Those components, there's about four or five elements which make up Earth. So it's mostly iron, and we are really the light scum. The crust is the light scum, which has gone on the top of this iron little ball bearing. So if you can imagine, the Earth is a small little ball bearing. And in fact, for the purposes of scale, so the Earth is 1/100th the width of the sun. It's not incredibly small. It's not incredibly big. It's 1/100th the width of the sun. So you can imagine 1 centimeter in a meter. For me, I think that's roughly the size of a jelly bean compared to my height. I think I'm roughly 100 jelly beans high. Now, so how come the sun appears so massive to the Earth? They sort of give you lots of figures. The sun's just roughly speaking at to within, I think, about 20%, a million times greater volume than the Earth. And the way that it does that is that a million times greater volume than the Earth is that's 100 across, 100 times higher, and 100 times deeper. That's 100 times 100. Times 100. 100 times 100 is 10,000, and 10,000 times 100 is a million. So that's how you get that there. So compared to your height, you're obviously, there's not a million jelly beans in you, but if you were a sphere and the jelly bean was a sphere, there'd be a million jelly beans in you just by the same calculations height. So you can get a relative feel of the size of the Earth to the size of the sun. So that's the first thing. I just wanted to start you off on the Earth and get you starting to look at the sun. And here's a question. We all know the moon's closer to Earth, and we all know than the sun. And the interesting thing is that the moon takes up the same angular amount in the sun, of the sky, as the sun. It's just one of those quirky things in history, like the fact that we are now pointing our orbital axis of rotation is now pointing at the southern hemisphere. We're at a point in history where the moon, which is slowly drifting away from us, is now drifted up such that it just perfectly blocks out the sun. And so this is almost perfectly. It can go a little bit further, and eventually there'll be no longer any total eclipses. So that's right. So if you wanted to paint or cut off the sun. The moon is covers the same angular position as the sun. So I'm going to ask you to do a bit of geometric maths. If you draw a triangle and from the earth to the sun, and that's an angle of about half a degree, but let's for ease make it 10 degrees or 5 degrees, multiply it by a factor of 10. The sun is out there. The moon, relative to the earth, must obtain the same angle. And indeed, we get the following rough numbers, that the moon is a quarter. It's not really, it's actually a little bit smaller, a quarter the width of the earth, and therefore it's 400 times smaller than the width of the sun. Okay, we can have that. And that also means that it's 400 times closer, or another way of saying that the sun is 400 times further away from us than the moon. So again, I'm asking you to do this in a podcast. I could do this on a YouTube, but the idea of this is to train me up to speak fluently and coherently, and to start paint pictures in your head. So we've got the relative distance there. Now let's just cross check this. A lot of people know that the moon's 1 to 1.25 seconds away, and the sun's 8 minutes away. So 8 minutes is 8 times 60 seconds. It's roughly 480 seconds away, just roughly speaking. So 480, if you were to, and that's roughly 400 times bigger than 1 1/4. So 400 plus a quarter is 500. And so it all figures out. And so just as well. But this gives you some basic ideas. So we're getting it now a not an impossible thing to imagine. We're imagining now the rotation of the Earth, rotating about its axis anti-clockwise, orbiting anti-clockwise, accounting for the sidereal day, which is 23 hours and 56 minutes, and the actual Earth day, which corresponds to the fact that we are also simultaneously tracking through space. We also have a general idea of the size of the Earth relative to the Sun. And indeed, these are the sort of basic things that you really need to have in your head when you're looking in astronomy to start getting some basic ideas. But we're now going to actually go into the structure of the Sun, and which is, for me, an incredible thing. So we're talking about the structure of the Sun, and I'm going to actually get into comets' tails and solar winds, because there's a really interesting story in that. So the inner 20% of the Sun, so it's, if the Sun is 100 times bigger than the Earth, the core, which is 20% of 100, is 20 times bigger than the Earth. It's just really easy. The core is where the business of fusion goes up. So again, I can obviously give you numbers to remember. The core is 150 times the density of water. So the overall core, and that gives you an idea that that's a lot of matter there. 150 times the density. The density of the center of the Earth is around 25, that of water. Water is water, so it compresses right down. So the core is, let's just do the maths, easily many, many times the density of the Earth. And if you've got 20 by 20 by 20, so that's 8,000 Earths just going into it. So there's a lot of mass there, and we know the sun is a very massive thing. So the core is where everything is really dense, and you might think, oh, it's like the Earth, it's all frothing and stuff like that. We're going to get another view into this, a new view of what the core is. So the core is up around, I think it's around 15 million degrees. Again, look, I'm doing this as practice all off the top of my head. You'll have to go away and cross-check these facts, or write them down, cross-check it. It's enough heat such that the protons, the hydrogen ions, stick together and form helium, releasing nuclear energy. And this nuclear energy seeps out of the sun. And this is where I think having a bit of science and not actually reading the labels on things helps you. It takes a million years for the for light generated, or heat generated in the core, to actually work its way through to the surface of the sun. There's something called the radiation zone, which I really think should be called the conduction zone, because it conducts heat. So it's called the radiation zone because they're looking at light conducting the heat, and the light moves around. But the way that they describe light conducting this this substance is just our way we describe heat conducting in a lump of metal. There's actually no difference. So when you read it up, you'll see this is called the radiative zone. I think the radiative zone goes up to 90% of the width of the sun. Maybe less, maybe 80%. I have to remember. It varies from star to star, and the way it varies is really, really interesting. So the point is of this radiative zone is that it's radiative because it's not convective. So we really should rename it. They call it the radiative zone. The actual process used is conduction, but the physics explaining is not convection. And why there's not convection here is that if you get things up to extreme density, you don't have the magical thing that you need for convection to occur. So let's just see, let give us an idea of what convection is. For convection, you need a gravitational field. We'll get reason. So you need a sense of up and down. You need a heat source, which is okay, and you need something to be heated, and that heated thing has to expand and become a lower density stuff. So it becomes lower density and it begins to float up like a balloon, convect. And so for convection, you need the gravitational field. The sun's got a gravitational field. You need heat. The sun's got heat. But you also need the property of the material such that when you heat it up, it expands. And as it travels, it's still hot, and it continues to go to slightly lower pressure, but it's still hot, keeps the heat, and continues to keep on floating up. This is a convection layer. Now, the place in physics as it is, and I've looked into it, and I really, to be honest with you, have not followed the key aha equation, but I'm sure it's in there, where this convection doesn't happen. And so really inner 80% of the sun is really just solid. It's not liquid. It is plasma, but it is high density. It's all still. It's not moving about the place. So if I was to have a high temperature wallet and drop it at a point in the sun, it would be there in millions of years to come. There is actually no movement. So if for all intents and purposes, the center of the sun is really solid. That is, that the actual, it has the property of a solid. That is, that the properties of a solid, in that there's a point, an atom in the solid, you come back and the atom's in that same location. So more or less, that's a definition of a solid, whereas in a liquid, the atom just mixes, you know, you put colouring in a food dye, that colouring in a drink, that moves around. In a gas, it diffuses. In a solid, it does diffuse, but it's very, over a shortish enough time scale, everything stays in the same position. And if you really want to get an idea, if you are ever in a have a outdoor fire and you have a hot brick and you heat it up and you crack it, you'll look inside, and inside that brick it will be hot. In fact, the light itself is actually trapped within the solid. It keeps on traveling a very short distance inside the solid and gets trapped in there. So that center of the sun is just hot and solid. It's pretty much like the heater element of an oven. You know, that's not moving about, not convecting. It's all hot and solid. This is an electric oven. So we go here, and so this is solid, and this solid thing, it is solid. What can I say? So when it rotates, the whole thing rotates at a certain speed from the pole to the equator of the sun. That entire center thing is solid, and it actually just rotates. Now, if you move above the solar, the density drops and new plasma physics takes over, and you can have a convection layer. So it's not that radiation and conduction stops, it's just that convection is such a marvelous way of transporting heat. You heat up some gas, which is taking millions of heat up some gas, so the light, which has taken millions of years to get from the center to the outside of the sun, it then has a quick conveyor belt ride of ballooning up in this convection layer. So this convection layer varies with different suns. Now, in fact, the fraction of the convection layer drops as the sun gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So your largest suns comparatively have a very thin skin. We've got a reasonable thin skin. Dwarfs or smaller stars have a much larger convection layer. That's because the pressure is lower and your magic plasma physics zone where convection stops doesn't start to much deeper down in the sun. And so this convection layer, you get that convection. And so that's it. So we've got the core sits within the radiation zone, radiation sphere. Now, bear in mind the way that you have to think of the radiation sphere is not radiation as light traveling from the surface of the sun to us. That, my friend, is radiation. You've got to think of it more like conduction. And the reason it's conduction is it can't convey. Now, here comes the real rub, the real interesting stuff. So this is why our sun is a sun like it is and not a red giant. This is the next thing that really happens. So you've got the solid sphere spinning, and you've got really solar weather. This is the radiative zone, and it's been pushed up, sped up, and slowed down as it goes as it's orbiting. So the actual layer is spinning at different speeds, and there's this huge shear layer on the, if you'd like, the surface, the solid surface of the sun, called the tachosphere. So this tachosphere is a huge shear layer, and it spins at a different rate. So it spins more slowly than the equator, which is been pushed forward, and it's actually been pushed forward by convection. This is the crazy thing, that the heat is actually pushing the belly of the sun around faster, and it's sort of slowing down the poles of the sun a little bit. But there's this large shear layer, and in fact, the sun is not spinning as you'd sort of imagine as a beautiful sphere. It is spinning as a beautiful sphere, but the actual equatorial spin is about a month ahead, 30 days ahead of the top spin. And so as you'll see sunspots move around as we're orbiting. We'll see sunspots come in and out of view over a couple of months. But those sunspots, if they line up, they spin around, and the sunspots in the center will have, of the sun near the equator, will have traveled faster. So we actually see the rotation speed here. So this rotation speed and convection drives the magnetic field of the sun. So you've got basically a domino effect. dynamo effect. And again, I've looked into some of the equations beyond me. I think there's something else that we really don't understand here. But that's the source of our equations. I can follow some equations. And we come up to the next fascinating layers. Now, at the moment, the actual thing which is dictating what's going on is a bit further on. So we've got the radiation zone, the convection zone, and above the convection zone is the surface of the sun that we can see, called the photosphere. Photograph, photosphere, it's the light sphere. It's the sun which has the sort of brightness of a flame and a candle flame. So, you know, the white part of the candle flame, well, that white bit of the candle flame is due to carbon nanospheres shrinking down and burning. It's soot which is burning in your flame. So when you're looking at a candle flame, the white part of the flame, you're actually seeing mini suns. It's a hard thing to get around. And so it's a similar glow to, say, if you put a piece of iron in a hot fire. You can't necessarily see the wispy flames and the heat, but that iron will be so dense that it'll be called optically thick, and it'll produce something called black body radiation. Again, I won't go exactly into how that orients itself. So it's this, if you can imagine the bright section of a candle flame where there's indeed mini suns. It sort of does my head in that if you look at a candle flame, it's glowing black body radiation. It's glowing black body radiation because the fuel is collapsing into these little carbon soot balls, and the carbon soot balls are radiating from their surface. So really, you've got a little mini galaxy in your candle flame. But it's the same process of just something very hot glowing, something optically dense glowing. And so that's doing all well, and so that pretty well plots from the huge temperature in the center of the sun, that the temperature is going down and down and down until it's around 5,000. Oh, what is it? 5,600 degrees Kelvin. I've forgotten what the actual degrees. Around 5,000, 6,000 degrees, and that's glowing black body radiation with all our wavelengths in a nice uniform way. So that's the photosphere. So let's go again. You've got the radiation zone with a core inside. Then you've got the tachosphere. That's what it's called there. That's a really important part, which is shearing the convection zone, which is all the gases going in big loops, like cloud, like weather, a solar weather on the inside. And this is just not hot gas. The hot gas moves and compresses in magnetic field lines. So there's a huge amount of magnetic field generated in the convection zone. And magnetic field has this property, if there's currents, have a property of creating lightning bolts. So currents moving in the same direction pull together. And so this is why a lightning bolt from a cloud, the current moves and gets pulled together in a lightning bolt and comes to ground. So it's not just a rain of gentle electricity, it goes in a lightning bolt. So you've got these high tension lightning bolts happening inside the sun all the time, huge lightning bolts. And on the surface of this, when this finishes, you have the photosphere. Now what's happening, I think it's called Alfvén waves. What's happening is that this, in fact, is a plasma heater. The closest thing we have for a plasma heater with electrons oscillating causing it is a microwave oven. So these lightning bolts, if you can imagine, and you can hear it, you can hear lightning bolts buzz. So the surface of the sun is buzzing, and it's beginning to heat up the sun. So the sun reaches its coldest point on the point that you can see it, and then after which the temperature begins to increase. And the next layer of the sun, which is, I think, around 2,000 kilometers, so that's really nothing in planetary speak. That's a tiny little shell. You may be able to pick it up. This is basically skin from our distance. Is a very thin layer of sun going up to, I think, 20,000 degrees, 40,000 degrees. It actually the temperature of the sun increases as you go towards us. Now, as it increases, it becomes much thinner. And so the next layer of the sun is called the chromosphere. Now, the chromosphere is a layer of very thin glowing gas. Now, if you want to get a layer of thin glowing gas, an example would be if you switched on your stove and didn't put paper in it, so you've got no black body radiation, it's just a gas which is glowing emission lines. And the chromosphere basically is emission lines. So it's sort of like a neon sign. So you've got the hearth of the sun, and above it is basically a glowing sign. And it is basically, if I can say, it's like a gas discharge light. It can be very gentle. I'm going to be called over here as my son's coming up. Julian, can I keep on going? Rupert, can I keep on going? Okay, we're going to have to stop here. I'll start the next podcast later on. Bye for now. I'll see you later.